This is Specific Objects, Talks on Art in the Catskills, and I'm your host, Miriam Atkin. Today I have here with me in the studio poet Chris Funkhauser, who will be speaking with me about the life and work of the late poet Cole Heinowitz, who is a beloved member of numerous overlapping communities across the Hudson Valley, New York City, New England, and Southern California. She was a professor of literature at Bard College since 2004 and played in multiple experimental music ensembles in the region. Tragically, Cole drowned in the Yuba River near Sacramento in May, and her many friends, fellow artists, and students are reeling from her absence. So this episode is a tribute to Cole, focusing on her music, her poetry, and the interplay between them. And we'll start with a track by Most Serene Congress, an ensemble she was in with Chris. But first, Chris, I'd like to ask you about the group. Who are the members and how did it come about?
Well, Most Serene Congress is a group that I started with David Hermes and Leonard Navarez in 2016. And Cole is actually the only time she ever played with us was this past March. Now, we were closely connected with her partly through her band, Satan's Black Acid. And we were all interested in improvisation. So that's really the thing that brought me together with that group, which I saw and was really impressed by. Yeah, anyway, Most Serene Congress is an ongoing group. It's an improv group. And you know the group that I was in with Cole was called Globe at first, and then had variable names. And the thing about the Globe was my wife Amy Huffnagel was the person with the Globe. We have this interactive kids toy, and from the very first time I ever played music with Cole, the Globe was present. Well, at least when Amy was present. So that band did its first show. public show at the end of March at the same concert, which was at the Quadrangle in Statsburg, which is a residence that I was moving out of at that time. So that was a thing that, you know, a real engagement, this Globe or Globo or O-Glob or E-Glob or whatever we happen to call it, that was something that was a little more sustained over time. And it all began when Cole and Will had us, including other guys in Most Serene Congress, over for like a campfire, late night social jam session. And as it turns out, Dave and Len didn't stick around till late enough to play music. And so it was Amy, who's not a musician, but a visual artist, myself and Cole and Will, and we played music then and at least a couple more times after that. And I also, during the years I had to stay over in Connecticut, I would come back and sometimes stay at their house and property in Boyceville. And always, getting together and playing music was a part of that. But this is not formal by any means. This is just all right, let's get the instruments out and see what happens. But discoveries were made, and I was very intrigued by Cole's approach to playing music, partly because we're very similar in our approaches. We were both very intuitive and, working, just responding to sounds. And, there was no... there are no real boundaries in any of this. It was just like play what you want and see how it all fits together. So after Will and Cole split and Satan's Black Acid was finished, Cole approached me about being musical collaborator, because she had been in touch with a former student of hers, Abe Etkin. And they were like, drumming up, sorry for the pun there, some, Abe is he's a property manager down in Basilica and offered up this space, Basilica in the gallery to rehearse. And who's going to say no to that, right? And that was a lot of fun and also pretty good in terms of the quality of what was happening. We're all multi-instrumentalists. Cole was I think she was trained as a saxophone player, but she loved to play the recorder, and she had another, you know, other handheld instruments, and she, toward the end, was starting to use her phone, have pre-recorded, have some recordings on her phone that she was like basically working with and doing duets with herself. You know, it was very low key. So we never really had intentions other than a time frame. Okay, it was almost like yoga at the beginning. How long are we going to play? And then once the music started, all bets were off. There was never a plan with in terms of instrumentation. You know, she had a three-string violin. I have a one-string guitar. And it worked, you know, because of our just way of listening and responding and working together rather than having some sort of a, you know, plan. The other nice thing about all of these sessions was that I had we all have a complete trust in what, you know, each other was doing. That makes sense. Like, we were all good friends. I mean, really, that's the foundation of all of this, and the ways that friends can get together and do things and make things, and we all just happen to, be interested in music and making music and made time to do it. And that's really what it was about. And, you know, Abe and I and others will probably still play music together, but it won't be the same because, you know, Cole is a, you know, she was a force, right?
Yeah. And Cole taught at Bard, and lived very close to Bard. Did these collaborations spring up out of this kind of geographic center in Dutchess and Columbia County? Because you all live somewhat close to each other.
Well, the collaboration sprung up because I saw Satan's Black Acid at Greenkill in Kingston, and I was really impressed with their whole approach. And you know, they got on the stage, and they just, it was so loud. It was as loud as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't really that kind of an audience. This is an art gallery and a poetry, music and poetry event called Hudsonics. And they just came on, and people almost instantly started leaving, which, you know, it takes guts to do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, all right, you know, and then it, you know, went on, and I was kind of interested in their whole approach, and it was clear to me that she had listened to a bunch of Albert Eiler, which is true. The band was very influenced by Albert Eiler and also Ornette Coleman, but on the loud side of things. And, you know, we just fell in with them. The Most Serene Congress and Satan's Black Acid played a concert together not long after that, and the Widow Jane Mine. And, you know, over the years, we were just kind of were interested in each other's work. So that's, proximity. Yeah, sure. We're in the same arts community. And I actually met Cole in 1994, but that we did not have a substantive conversation again for like 25 years after that or something.
And in Satan's Black Acid, she played multiple instruments, or was it primarily saxophone?
Yes. In the concerts, it was all saxophone. In the recordings, she plays a recorder. And she did love the recorder. Hmm. And she had more than one. And then she was a singer and vocalist also. And her, I don't know all the details of her background other than she played in punk bands in Southern California as well. I don't know what instrument she, I mean, she loved to wail on the saxophone. No two ways about it. It was great to hear.
I think that what I'll do is play the Most Serene Congress track and the Globe track consecutively. And so now you will get to hear Most Serene Congress and Globe. Thank you.
then becoming the one sort of here, but in none of its aggression toward the absolute pure product in parts. A new mother's Chilean soccer fan to my half-forgotten business advances. Remember the right I looked at, I tell myself and I tell the mineral fact if it matters. Beautiful homeless man, put myself, I would be azure. It is emotional. My hand on my heart and poetry bores me. And you said you're hurting me. He does not know how by their own activity. Also held his heart of silence, dreaming incredible tales of wickedness. Thank you. told me. More frequently than when we got out, my purse, a carnelian, and feel its every layer suspended, spilled out on the platform. Smooth contours, dreams, and springtime. And he picked up all my images and days. Most grads have collapsible things handed them simple. Hogtied in a parking spine, insanity and high back to me. The earth lot and mess tents and places, whatever the hell speaks. The black hospitals and sheds in a ruined country that means rectangular beings. We are not holy though. The earth speaks and, like a large deck, families salamander. I was. There's no one here but us talk. Carrying objects like pollinate a pink daffodil chicken. Quite sufficient. A beaded screen or a soft absolutely what they say. Incline and half mad. Uranian androgynous, so are not helping. They will exist. I have the soundtrack. Coldest hours, I am good, running through your head. Fill me up, shaky bridge. Is it the same world? I like falling power, strange. I am bad. Find me, self. Tourism as if it were desire. You're all making castration baseball 4 years longer. This up, return, and do not know how. Because your boyfriend, the first response to never, the isolated man is, well, dead on another girl. Distance. If he can black nothing but the many that appeared and I beat her. And greens. Cooperations we are is to laugh instead of be split open. Shall give, they said, 2 years. Strange for the youngest birth to his own father. Arson people change and two people I know sooner or later live in the purple dozen rooms return a hero. Buildings with the oldest fog. Lime in my touch over and over. Great world that is mad. Things have happened. I, city of the corporations, so hot. Peace of far to go. Think. Everyone is a bastard. Rescue. So you have chosen.
Thank you.
from the very first time playing music with Cole, it was interesting. You know, she had some quirky things that she liked to do. Like the first night we were playing, she started putting album sides on while we were playing. You know, and I thought that was especially unusual to take like a can LP or something. And then I learned a lot. She was an educator, but she wasn't trying to educate. She just did by example. She was not afraid to start somewhere and then be followed. But she was also really good at listening, and as things evolved, responding to someone else who was in more of a lead role. So I think that was a gift that she had, to be a leader but also a follower. So that was a real blessing in terms of the collaboration, and it's almost impossible to replace.
Yeah, that really reflects my experience of her as a conversationalist, and that, you know, she could talk for sure, but she was also one of the most spectacular listeners I've ever met.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I know she could talk all night and listen all night and did sometimes. So, yeah. Yeah. And a fun person to be around. I mean, I think it's worth saying that she was in life in general, she was kind of a risk taker. Not kind of a risk taker. She was a risk taker. And, you know, that went into her artwork, her translation, her writing, and the music too. I mean, you know, just to even do some of these things is taking a risk. You know what I mean? It's just like bold. There's a boldness to it. And certainly, as everybody who knew her knows, there was an energy. She was so dynamic and active in her thinking. That's rare.
Next, I'd like to play a recording of Cole's reading at the 29th Annual Subterranean Poetry Festival at the Widow Jane Mine, which took place in 2019. The festival was organized by Chris that year, and Cole's participation was particularly memorable. Can you bring us back to that time and tell us a bit about Cole's arrival and her reading?
Well, there were a number of years where I was asked to curate the Subterranean Poetry Festival, which I always enjoyed and always tried to bring in a balance of people from New York and, upstate. So Cole was on the bill that day, and it was a really good bill with Josh Beckman and Fred Moten, Jasmine Dream Wagner, and John O'Grady was on there, Kenning J.P. Garcia. I mean, it was a lively, and Steve Mirabito was on that day as well, and others. So Cole, normally the poets, they show up when the event is starting, and they respectfully sit through everybody's reading. And I had every indication that was what Cole was up to. And then, is anybody seeing Cole? The reading goes on. The reading is like 3 hours. It wasn't just like an hour-long reading. And then after the last poet reads, and I was asking, anybody seeing Cole? So she was, she was there in her absence. And then, like an apparition, she shows up after the last poet's finished. And she was, you'll hear on the recording our whole dialogue. And I was very, I was glad that she showed up. And I didn't know what to do at first, but I was like, okay, well, get on stage, let's go. So that was, and she gave it a really dynamic reading. She had been getting ready for the reading. It wasn't like she was not prepared. She was very prepared and read materials relating to caves of sorts, and it was great. That's the story.
Did she just get the time wrong?
Yes,
or?
she somehow got the the end is the, she thought the end time was the beginning time. And I didn't really bother me, honestly, especially afterwards. I you know, a lot of respect for all the work she did. She was very, you know, prodigious as a translator and constantly writing. And she was very engaged with her students also. I mean, her students, you know, they loved her. She understood them. You know, I heard one student say she was the only teacher who ever understood me and this kind of thing. So she had a lot of things, you know, vying for her attention. So, all right, it's a good thing she made it.
So the recording you're about to hear from 2019 includes Chris's intro to Cole, followed by Cole's intro to herself, followed by her reading of a poem called Letter to Charles Olson.
Ladies and gentlemen, Cole Heinowitz has arrived, and she is going to give a poetry reading. So you can hang out here and listen to the reading. I know I will. And if you don't want to listen, you can go eat apples outside. Now, let me finish. I'm so glad to see you, Cole. We were all very worried. All right. We're going to pick up where we left off. Doesn't matter. Cole Heinowitz is a poet and a translator who's presently, professionally, the director of literature program at Bard. In addition to her literary activities, she is vocalist and plays saxophone and other instruments in the Hudson Valley poetry band Satan's Black Acid. Cole Heinowitz.
This is the biggest screw up, but Chris, you saved the day. I really want to read this stuff to you guys because I wrote it just for this, and then I screwed it up completely. When Satan's Black Acid played here, I realized that the vocals were kind of muffled because I was too close to the mic. Can you hear the words I'm saying with clarity?
Cool. Okay.
So so weird.
Right.
You want some company?
No, I'm okay. So, it's funny that this is in a cave, and I called the bodies of work that came to be the poems I'm going to read to you caves. I also called them mines, and this is also a mine. And I think it was, when I was very young, I was at Naropa, and I heard Michael Ondaatje gave a talk about how he writes, and he said, I would never be able to move forward if I didn't have a cave for every document that I produce. And I put shit there that I can't face, but somehow know I can't just ditch. And oftentimes those caves will turn into mines. And so ever since I was 17, I've got caves and mines for everything. So, and it takes on particular significance for me because I went through an extraordinarily difficult illness and have been really struggling to write about it. What I did manage to write was a poem that I've read before but never here, and everything else was consigned to the cave, and some of that cave stuff sort of percolated up and became mines. And then I still haven't been able to shake the need to say the things that I stuck in the cave. So, after 4 years of trying, I've got a version, and I was enabled by the fact that I'm in a cave. And especially, this is even better that it's over. The event is over. You know, so like, this is not even happening. So it's absolutely perfect because I feel totally uncomfortable with this material in the sense that I've never read it before. I just finished it today. What I'm going to do is I'm going to read the poem that I was comfortable with being outside of the cave. And then I want to fill in the missing pieces a little bit. That sound okay?
Right.
So, the one thing I was able to write about this experience is in a poem that you hardly ever know. I almost think this is a guard protecting or concealing my experience. And I don't know if you guys know Jackie Waters, but after she put out the chapbook, Garden of Eden, the college, she put out another chapbook, which was the shadow chapbook of that chapbook called The Guard of an Eden College. And I kind of feel like this poem is a guard for what is going to be unguarded in 5 minutes. Letter to Charles Olson, a poem. You cut into story the primary equal of its parts, of what has been converted from legend and myth into something called history, where people having lived here for millennia, unrelieved, more or less escapes the conversation. You know the diminishment, I mean, the present loss of context and the misery of expenditure and gain, for which read urgency. What is it with this country that will not wait a minute before it strikes, but is always looking for its history as a transcript of experience which doesn't have what this or that girl said or did, and this is loss. Anyone who would try to make this reappear as art has to damn well respect the consequences, to make them clear, to compose his refusal of the misery in abundance, to walk in that world where you find the real in any direction, not the spent presentation of some American event, lifting up meaning only to break it on the floor, asserting it should have been realism. Dear Charles, I'm not going to write to you from my usual position of giving reasons for not writing to assure you I'm alive, because today is good. The old voices I've neglected have come back and are demanding an outlet with surprising kindness given the criminals they've had to live with. Anyway, I dreamt last night about your vision of the beautiful boat. But either my memory failed or my eyesight did, and I realized I'd have to build the thing entirely from scratch. At first I froze, then suddenly the boat tacked and I was jumping sideways to avoid being hit by the boom. I was reading this in a book I could see but couldn't feel. When I went to turn the page, my fingers didn't touch anything. It was the sacred book of language. It was open to a page that read, work dexterously with delight. Draw everything out from your heart. Meet it with your mind. Compose the pieces. Make them adjust. There was something throbbing in my heart, dark with a red glow, spreading into my guts and throat. I wanted it to spread through my limbs and radiate out of my body, but I only knew how to draw the forces in. So I gathered it back to my heart and rocked it like a baby. Someone on my left was beating the air away from my head with a feather. The shapes of an eagle and then a butterfly appeared in a fierce red glow. They drew closer and closer until all I could see was the color. Steora. Star from a bird's wing. A myth. Back when human language was an animal, it carried the earth and the sky in its mouth and everything spoke. That was when the sun fell in love with the moon. Sun had heard that moon was contained in an old hollow log, so he scooped out the log to build a boat that would carry them away. Foolish sun, swelling sun, lie quiet. Moon is missing, and only deer can bring her back. Lie quiet, sun, and wait for deer to pass, for nothing lasts. So, sun waited the entire day, and when night finally came, moon appeared in the sky. Sun stole a deerskin to disguise himself and flew to her, and they were joined. Moon shone brightly then, but soon she went in search of other lovers, and the more she loved, the more brightly she shone. She grew so bright that no living thing on earth could sleep, and everyone went mad. They begged Sun to put out one of her eyes. And because Sun was jealous of Moon's lovers, he did. Dear Charles, this morning someone told me that the weathermen split from SDS and became terrorists because they were brainwashed by a cult. He remembered being at what he thought was a party when he realized that everyone was performing a ritual and that they wanted him to join. For several minutes, he felt the blackest guilt for all the beings he had harmed, willingly or not. Then, all of a sudden, the guilt disappeared, and in every cell he felt his oneness with the universe. Since I know you studied Crowley, I thought, now is the time to write to Olson and tell him why I've been silent so long. He will understand. This is a ritual to banish silences. Love, Cole.
This combination of recordings really exemplifies the kind of ecstatic quality of her way of being in the world, tinged with a certain kind of, I don't know, sublime morbidity.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
You can hear it in the language. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not, you have to let the listener or the reader, you know, hear it for themselves and interpret it for themselves. But I know what you mean, for sure. There's some haunting stuff that I, you know, from my perspective, emerges in that. Everybody has has the potential to have dark thoughts.
Yes.
So that's not so unusual, but, you know, in something like the tragedy that we experienced and she experienced, you have a different spin on things.
Yeah.
After that, I think it's worth mentioning, you don't have to put this part on the air, but I did a program on Poet Radio last month, and mm-hmm. it's in the WGXC archive that I went through, and there's more. Recordings, some raw, some very good recordings. The last Globe show in its entirety is up there. So, I mean, if you're interested in knowing more, there's that. The Green Kill video is something special. Their Bandcamp site is still up. So, take a look.
Yeah, definitely check that out. There's another piece of the Widow Jane Mine reading that is really beautiful. And I can link that in the show notes as well.
Miriam, thank you so much for inviting me to be on your program. It's a real pleasure. And I'm also grateful that you're, have your attention and thoughts with Cole, because, she was quite special and deserves all the attention and recognition that we can give her.
She does. Thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure.
If you're just tuning in, this is Specific Objects, Talks on Art in the Catskills, and I'm your host, Miriam Atkin. For the remainder of the hour, you'll hear an audio collage alternating between tracks from Cole Heinowitz's band, Satan's Black Acid, recordings of her poetry readings, and me reading excerpts from the astonishing tribute to Cole written by her dear friend, Felix Bernstein. The readings are all from Cole's Penn Sound page, which you can find at writing.upenn.edu/pennsound. And the musical tracks are from the Satan's Black Acid Bandcamp page. Felix's piece about Cole will appear in the Brooklyn Rail in an upcoming issue. I'm not sure which one, but keep an eye out for that. I'll provide links in the show notes, whether you're listening at WGXC or on a podcast streaming platform.
être collectif. Être absolu, c'est faire l'amour. Nous devrions soutenir ce que l'ennemi oppose et opposer ce que l'ennemi soutient. Quoi qu'il en soit, nous sommes contre. La guerre révolutionnaire est la guerre des sons. Elle ne peut être menée qu'en en mobilisant les sons et en s'appuyant sur eux. Nous ne pouvons pas continuer à prostituer la force de la guerre, théâtre, dont la seule valeur est dans sa relation atroce, magique avec la réalité et le danger. S'il doit y avoir révolution, il doit avoir révolution. Nous avons ici en principe le fétichisme marchand, la domination de la société par des chaussons. Les qualités sont en mettant perceptibles et imperceptibles. Le sentiment que leur tête explose, le sentiment que le cerveau s'est rétréci comme si nous trahit, le sentiment que l'homme est contrôlé à distance.
So early poems of Alejandra Pizarnik. This is from a book called Last Innocence from 1956. Inamorata. This morbid obsession with living, this inexplicable impulse to live drives you, Alejandra, don't deny it. You saw yourself in the mirror today, a child, a corpse, the light roared, the air sang, but you never saw your beloved. You'll signal, you'll smile, you'll wave your hands to make your beloved appear. You hear the crackle of the siren who stole your beloved, the foam-encrusted ship where laughter died. You remember your final embrace. Spare us your anguish. Stifle your hilarious sobs. Shut the doors of your face so no one can say that love-stricken woman is you. Your days are remorse. Your nights are blame. Life hurts you so much, little one. Where will you go? Desperate woman, shut up.
Her central claim was that we are all the monster, made up of composite organs, including millions of microorganisms, and spliced together by language viruses that cannot produce a coherent body. Echoing Artaud's claim that man is sick because he is badly constructed, that is, made up of ill-fitting organs and an impossible demand for organization from God.
I
That's all. I see the truth now. It sparks my desire and my wretchedness, my absence, my instability, my delirium. I see the truth now. Now, look for life.
Cole had an unusual propensity to take even the most hesitant, delusional, paranoid, or fanciful utterances seriously. When Artaud speaks of a police state gagging our mouths with nefarious magic, she does not decide whether he is projecting, hallucinating, metaphorizing, or stating empirical facts. What holds sway is the degree of lucidity, the intensity of resolution, the illumination of sensation. This became her definition of the romantic, not a kind of text, but an infectious impulse derived from encountering the outside, a sublime capacity to be stunned, to have one's heart broken open.
In an evacuation ritual governed by lunar orbits, the timeless family dynamic harvests its suspended communions. Latitude line intubation serves as folk cure for consumption in the shelter, and enteral feed tubes combat suppertime bouts of personlessness. In the dollhouse once used to prepare foreign placentas, armchairs and bookcases have been pillaged to make way for gurneys. Huguenots, or anacondas, course through the waves to a place called value, where loyalty has its own form of conjugation, depending on what enzymes break it down. At the island port, a new line of mothers advances.